Our next guest is Jim Minnick, an instructor of English at Radford University. Each year, Jim takes the students on a kind of shopping trip to the local Walmart, asking them to sort through which of the items for sale are necessities and which ones are luxuries. Thoreau made a point of being very clear about the difference between luxuries and necessities. What did he say about those? How far do you think we've strayed from his concept?
Let's start with his definitions. For necessities, he said we needed food, clothing, and shelter. And, you know, when you think about that, that's pretty basic. I would have a hard time living without a car right now. So, our ideas of necessities probably shifted some. And then for luxuries, I'm going to read his quote. "Most of the luxuries and many of the so-called comforts of life are not only not indispensable, but positive hindrances to the elevation of mankind." So for him, luxuries limited us from becoming better people. You know, when you think about how luxuriant our lifestyle is and at what cost that's coming to us, there's some truth in that still. But luxury is a relative term. I mean, for most of the world, hot water is probably a luxury. And yet, imagine taking a cold shower every day. So,
and I think I'm a better person with a hot shower.
Yeah. I know that I have a better attitude of the day. So, yeah, mm-hmm. We live a very high lifestyle. But if everybody lived that way, we would be without a planet, basically.
You know, Thoreau did talk about the cost of a thing is how much of your life you're willing to spend to obtain it. What did he mean by that?
He gave the example of walking, because for him to pay to buy the train ticket, he would have had to have devoted a day or whatever to working. And so for him, it was much easier and faster and more enjoyable to walk. I try to get my students to think about, you know, you want this particular car. How many years of your life do you have to work to get that car? You know, what is the cost, not only to yourself, but to the larger community? And not only now, but in the long term. You know, the cost of, one of the costs of our AC, our love for our addiction for air conditioning, is mountaintop removal. And how many people factor that in? You know, I think 16% of the average household's energy consumption is for air conditioning. And most of our, roughly half of our energy comes from coal. And so there's huge hidden costs in all of that coal burning and digging and, you know, it's complete devastation of mountains.
When you talk about the cost of consumption, are you thinking more about the cost to society and to the environment, or are you thinking about spiritual deprivation?
Spiritual, I guess I would use the word health. For me, if we valued health instead of wealth, we would be much better in many different ways, in terms of both physically and spiritually, but also in terms of our community. You know, we would have a better sense of who our neighbors were and how we could work together to make a better place for where we live.
And of course, we've all heard the phrase, money can't buy happiness, and that the accumulation of things can make us spiritually empty. But you know, you look around and you see people with a lot of things, and they really do seem pretty comfortable and satisfied. And you can't tell that they're spiritually empty. What do you say to your students about that?
Spiritual journeys are, they're so personal, it's so hard to know. You know, that's what Thoreau is getting at with the elevation of mankind. He said that with respect to luxuries, the wisest have ever lived a more simple and meager life than the poor. So it's not necessarily being rich or poor, but it's how you make the decisions in your life. You know, my favorite pair of shoes is the old beat up ones. And sure, I have a new pair of dress shoes that I wear when I have to wear, but they're not that comfortable. So if we can think about happiness and spirituality in terms of the wholeness of the body and the body of the world, I think we'll be getting closer to that. But it's so hard to talk about because it's such a personal thing. And yet We go to church, and that's, you know, that's probably a whole different ballgame. But I don't see most of the churches really answering that spiritual happiness question either.
You did an interesting analysis of consumer habits in Walmart. Tell me a little bit about what your lesson is with that.
Once I ask students to open the door of Thoreau's Shack, I then ask them to open the door of the local grocery store and enter it with Thoreau by their sides. And I ask them to analyze how the grocery store is laid out, and we come away talking about, you know, what people usually buy, and that's milk and bread, and then where are those located, and opposite or back sides of the store, and why? Because you have to walk through all these other aisles of candy and cereal saying, take me home. And
is that deliberate, do you think? Stores really put their bread and milk in the most remote?
Oh, sure.
Oh.
They spend millions of dollars in marketing and thinking about store layout. That's the same with commercials. You know, why are commercials so much faster? You know, so many clips per second as opposed to regular TV shows. And that's, you know, the eye cannot, you know, the marketers know that the eye cannot release itself from that viewing such fast motion.
So tell me what you do with Walmart using that information.
I ask students to look at what's available for people to buy and what people are buying, and then to guesstimate the percentages of luxuries versus necessities. You know, what is a luxury? And we have some lively debates about meat. You know, there's usually a vegetarian in class that says meat's a luxury, you don't need it. And Thoreau agrees with that. But the consensus is usually roughly 3/4 of what's in the store and what people are buying is luxury. And then 25% is necessity. And for a while, after 9/11, it was common for students to say, you know, money isn't the main thing. It's family, it's relationships, it's happiness. And some of that still exists, but more and more it's back to got to get the money, got to climb up that ladder. Money will buy me the things that I want that will then make me happy. But for a while, once they begin to really question that and see what they're a part of every time they walk into the grocery store, they think differently. They see that the American dream is not so much a dream, that we are fat in the body but skinny in spirit, one student once said. But I don't know how that much. You know, it's always teaching is so hard to measure, really. You know, we have all these tests, but it's very hard to measure what sticks and what influences and what lasts.
Why do you think we consume so much as a society?
We're spoiled. You know, I love to eat fruit and vegetables. I love to go into a grocery store and think, all this is mine to be had. You know, there's so much color, so many choices. It's wonderful. But then again, we go back to, you know, what really makes us happy. And it's not money, for sure, I think.
What do you think the role of television is in our consumer culture?
It's ironic that, you know, you sit down and watch TV and it consumes us in a way. It consumes our time, and in so doing, it makes us want to consume other things. And it's a great little tool for marketing the consumptive American dream lifestyle. But John Prine has an old song called, you know, I forget what it's called, but blow up the TV, throw out the TV, buy little peaches, move to the country. It's worth playing if you got a chance.
What about you? Have you thrown your TV out?
Well, for a while we lived without a TV. And, well, I grew up with a TV. You know, I grew up typical American kid, middle class. Instead of at the dining room table, we would sit down at the couch with the TV in front of us and our plates on our laps, and we would watch TV and eat supper and time it so that we could get the weather and the headlines. And then, you know, 6:45, we would be done, and I would realize, you know, I hadn't really paid attention to what was on my plate. I hadn't tasted anything. it's so hard to turn that TV off. The best thing for me was just to not have it. So now we have a TV that has no reception, but we watch it occasionally with movies, and I get the news through papers and the radio.
What sort of steps would you advocate people try taking that could maybe move them more gently into a less consuming lifestyle?
There's many, many things people can do, small or large. It would be great if everybody could grow a garden, and that's not possible, but maybe you could buy local or buy sustainably certified food if it's organic or lumber or along those lines. If you have money to invest it in local and green businesses like a co-op that I'm part of, the Blue Ridge Forest Cooperative. Other things you could do is just walk, and if you have to drive, then drive more slowly. It's amazing. I just did a little research. Every mile per hour above 55 decreases the fuel efficiency by 1 mile per hour, and then after you get to 65, it's even more. So don't be so dependent on AC if you can. And here's an even touchier one that most people don't want to think about, but and this is probably not a baby step, but don't have kids or have fewer kids. We need to think about population. What are we giving to our kids?
Mm-hmm. Did you have children?
No, I don't.
They certainly consume.
Yeah, and I see the joys of being around them, the liveliness and the energy and the new ways of seeing the world new. But I also know enough that it's getting harder and harder to think about the world they're going to have once they become adults.
Mm-hmm.
And how much they do consume. Yeah, it's amazing what people will spend on their kids.
Well, Jim, this is great food for thought, and thank you for talking with us today on With Good Reason.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure, Sarah.
Blow up your TV, throw away your paper, go to the country, build you a home, plant a little garden, eat a lot of peaches.
Jim Minnick is an instructor of English at Radford University. You're listening to With Good Reason. Nancy King and Elliot Majerzik are our associate producers. Andrew Windham is our executive producer. Jeannie Palin handles listener services, and Lydia Wilson's our publicity coordinator. We had help this week from Al Sykes of WHRV in Norfolk and from Bart Prater of WVTF in Roanoke. With Good Reason is produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities for the Higher Education Broadcasting Consortium and public radio station serving Virginia. For a free copy of this show on CD or to comment, call 877-451-5098. We'd love to hear from you. You can also subscribe to our podcast or listen to past shows at our website at withgoodreasonradio.org. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.
She said, you must know the answer. She said, no, but I'll give it a try. And to this very day, we've been living our way. Here is the reason why. We blew up our TV, threw our paper, went to the country, built us a home, had a lot of children, fed them on peaches.